Okay, we're starting here with the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Hachoshish bishinav," someone who is having toothaches, lo yigameya behenet achomet, person shouldn't swallow vinegar to cure as a cure for the toothache. Aval tabelhu kedarko, person can use vinegar as a dip and dip his bread into the vinegar and then eat it normally. Because that's, again, machal briyim, that's what normal people would do. Now, even though here he intends to do it for his toothache, nevertheless he's acting or exhibiting behavior that other people would have, and it's not obvious that he's doing it simply for the toothache. Vinitrape, nitrape. If that works, then great. Ochoshesh bimotnav. Someone's having issues with his loins. Lo yisoch yayin vichometz. One cannot put on their wine or vinegar. You could put on oil, below shemen verid, but not rose oil. So again, things that are considered to be normal, one can do because they do not indicate any medicinal utilization of these items. Yain and chometz, put wine or vinegar in that area would be considered unusual and would be only done for medicinal purposes, and therefore would be asur on Shabbat. To put shemen, that's a normal thing to do, and therefore it's mutar. Shemen Vered, rose oil, was not used except for the very wealthy or those of the aristocracy. So to put it on, again, would have been something that would be considered unusual. B'nei Menachim, princes, Sachin Shemen Vered al Makotehem. They used to put this rose oil on their wounds. Shekein Darkam Lasuch Pecho. Because that's what they do during the weekdays. They're not doing anything different on Shabbat than they would do on a weekday. And because of that, that's considered to be normal behavior. It's not necessarily associated with medicinal outcomes. Shimon Omer, Kol Yisrael, B'nei Melachim Heim. Shimon believes that all Jews are like princes. Since all Jews are like princes, even though they don't normally on a weekday use this rose oil, they will be entitled to use it on Shabbat if it comes about that they need to use it. And we won't say, oh, this is unusual. This is something that is considered to be medicinal in nature and not normal in nature. Rami le Rav Acha Arika, Rav Acha the long one, Duhu Rav Acha Bar Papa, le Rav Babi Abu Atnan. We have our Mishnah, Choshesh Bishinav, Yigameh Behenet HaChometz, the memory of the Chometz, Malei Lishinayim. To answer me this, that vinegar is good for a toothache. V'haktiv. Don't we have a Pasuk in Mishlei that says, Kechometz Lishinayim, Uche Ashan Le'enayim. It's talking about something that is negative in nature. And when it says the negativity that it associates with it is like vinegar to your teeth and like smoke to your eyes. So just like smoke to your eyes is not something that you would consider pleasant or curative. So too, why would you consider this vinegar to be something positive for the teeth when the pasuk is clearly saying that it is negative? Lokasha, ha bikyua deperi, ha bechalo. Depends why you have this vinegar. There are two ways that the Gemara is suggesting here that you can end up with this vinegar. You can have vinegar because you had wine that went bad, wine that turned into vinegar. The other possibility is you have unripe grapes. Unripe grapes that were squeezed into wine, but they'll never really ferment or become wine because of the nature of those grapes being unripe. That's the cua de peri. The acidity of the grapes is what creates that type of vinegar. So that would be something that is negative as opposed to the chala, the regular vinegar, that would be something that is positive. Ibai dema, hava ha b'chala. In both cases, we're talking about regular vinegar. Ha d'ika maka, ha d'leka maka. That there is a difference whether he has an injury or doesn't have an injury. Ika maka, if you have an injury or problem with the gums in the teeth, then masi, then it's curative, then it's helpful to have the vinegar in there. Leka maka, if you do not have any injury or any wound on the gums, then mirafe. It loosens the gums. As Rashi says, it's somata basar vashinaim near pim rechokim zemizeh. So the gum base, which in which the teeth sit, the jaw in which the teeth sit, they start to loosen up with the utilization of this vinegar. So if you have an issue in the mouth, then the vinegar is efficacious, it's helpful to have it. If you don't have an issue, then the properties of it loosening up the gums and the teeth is something that is negative, and that's what the pasuk was speaking about. Where it says, V'atanyu, our Mishnah says, Lo yigameh mehemet ha-chometz, that you shouldn't swallow the chometz. But we have a braita that says, Lo yigameh ha-upolet, you can't swallow the vinegar and then spit it out. You can take it in and then just swallow it, and then it won't be a problem. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where he swashes around the vinegar and then he spits it back out. And then it'll accord with the Braita, because the Braita says that's problematic. And our Mishnah is saying the same thing, that if you wash around, rinse your mouth with the vinegar and then spit it back out, you gargle with the vinegar and spit it back out, that would be problematic. That's what the Braita says explicitly, and that's what is meant by our Mishnah here. That's the way Abai explains it. Rav Amar, afilu tema migamea uvalea. Even in a case where he rinses out, swallows, gargles, and then spits, and then swallows it afterwards, even in that case, there could be a problem. Kan lifnei tibul, kan achar tibul. Depends where he is in the meal. If he's before the point of the meal where they normally dipped, then it's not a problem, because his interaction with the vinegar would be normal. On the other hand, if it's after he's already dipped in the meal, then he would have a problem. Because after the dipping, it's already obvious the only reason he's bringing the vinegar back is for its curative properties for medicinal reasons, not because it's quote-unquote part of the meal, part of his normal course of eating. And that would be indicative of him using it for medicinal reasons, and that would be problematic on Shabbat. So that's what he'll suggest here. Our Mishnah is a case where he's interacting with the vinegar after in the meal he would have been in the normal process of dipping, and that's why it's a sur. The Braita is talking about a case where it's prior to that point in time, and therefore if he put it in his mouth and then swallowed it, it would be fine. Mar says, wait a minute, v'neima milifnei tibul shari lachar tibul nami shari. Wait a minute, if it's mutar before you get to the point of the meal where you're dipping, then it certainly should be mutar afterwards. Dishma'inan le the Rava, because we already have heard this principle from Rava. Deit le hoil. He has this principle called hoil. Since something is true, something else must be true. Now here on Shabbat, as Rashi finds out here that ain the chash asur the miksat Shabbat, umutar the miksato. We don't have things that are mutar for a part of Shabbat and then asur for a part of Shabbat. Either something is mutar on Shabbat or something is asur on Shabbat. We don't have things cut off in the middle of Shabbat, change status in the middle of Shabbat. That doesn't happen. So why over here would Rava say that it's mutar before that point in the meal and asur after that point in the meal? And we also know that Rava says this in another context, which is, Dama Rava, Leka midei debishabbat shari ubiyom kippuri masur. There's nothing that would be mutar on Shabbat, and yet on Yom Kippur would be asur. Shabbat is a higher level of Kedusha than Yom HaKippurim. We know that because the punishment for the violation of Shabbat is Skila. Whereas the punishment for the violation of Yom HaKippurim is Karet. So Shabbat has both Karet and Skila, whereas Yom Kippurim only has Karet. So we know that Shabbat is on a higher level in terms of the Kedusha. So his point is that it can't be that you could do something on Shabbat that would then be Asur on Yom HaKippurim. It's inconsistent that you could have something that's more holy and then have something be mutar, and then on Yom Kippur have something that's asur. Ho, to be Shabbat shari, Yom Kippurim, nami shari. Since it's mutar on Shabbat, it must be mutar on Yom Kippurim. Where it says, hader bei Rava meach. Rava reversed his position. The question is, which one did he say first of these two opinions? He has an opinion here about our Mishnah, and he has an opinion regards to the interaction between Shabbat and Yom Kippurim. So now the Gemara says, which one did he say verse, and which one is a reversal of the other opinion? So right now the Gemara says, well, it must be that he reversed his position with regards to our Gemara over here, because of what we find in the other Gemara. The Gemara says, Mima'ai demihachadarbe, demima'ai hadarbe. How do you know that our statement was made first, and then the statement by Yom Kippurim and Shabbat is a reversal of that opinion? Maybe he made the statement over there by Shabbat and Yom Kippurim first, and his statement here is a reversal of that position. How do you know which way to go? How do you know which one's first and which one's the reversal of the opinion? Where it says, Lo salka datcho, you wouldn't have thought that way. Titanya kol chayvei tfilot tovlim kedarkan ben betisha ba'av ben biyom ha-kippurim. So we have a statement with regards to Tvila on Yom HaKippurim and Tvila on Tisha B'Av, that a person who has to go to the mikveh on these days, they can go to the mikveh without any problem, without any issue, despite the fact that on Yom Kippur, and despite the fact that on Tisha B'Av, there's an Isur Rechitza. There's an Isur to bathe on those days. Despite the fact that there's an Isur to bathe on those days, nevertheless, we say that it is Mutar Litbol. Tosafot discusses what exactly the scenario is over here. Why a person is allowed to go, whether it's regular tefillah, which is only in a case according to the one who says tefillah bizmana mitzvah. Whereas according to the one who says that going to the mikveh on time is a mitzvah, and therefore you wouldn't want to give up the opportunity to go to the mikveh on time, because that's a mitzvah. If tefillah bizmana is not a mitzvah, then why not just wait till Motzei Yom HaKippurim? Why not wait till after Tisha B'Av? So he speaks about this and assumes that it has to be according to the one who says that tefillah bizmana mitzvah. So that's or according to those that require tefillah at a very specific time, that would require you to go at that time. Otherwise, why not postpone it? Why not wait till afterwards? He does bring a dissenting opinion to this. We know there's an Atano, Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim, who says, Kedai Beit Elokeinu, Labeid Alav Tefillah Chat Bishana. The Beit HaMikdash is worth giving up one Tefillah Bizmana once a year in Tisha B'Av to show that it's a different day, and we give up the mitzvah to show our mourning, our velut over the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara, he says that the Yushalmi says, Hilchot HaKavate, the Lacha is like him in this instance. Now, with regards to Tefillah and Tisha B'Av and Yom HaKippurim, the basic principle that we utilize in these cases with regards to Tisha B'Av and Yom HaKippurim is that the rechitza that is asura on those days is a rechitza of hana'ah. It's a rechitza that is beneficial of pleasure sorts. For instance, if someone walks and gets muddy, gets their feet full of mud on Yom HaKippurim, then they're allowed to wash off their feet to remove the mud from their feet. They're not washing for purposes of hana'ah, pleasure, or bathing for pleasure. They're just doing it to remove the dirt that is on their feet. That type of rechitza is permitted on Yom HaKippurim. That's why, for instance, if someone comes into, gets meluchlach, they change a diaper, they do something on Yom HaKippurim that gets them dirty, we don't say don't wash. You can wash, because there you can remove what's on there. There's a removal of dirt is considered to be fine on those days. So here you'd also have to talk about a tefillah in the context of tefillah, that it should not be a tefillah of hana'at. The person can't go in there to bathe or go in for pleasure, but rather they go in to simply accomplish the mitzvah of tevilah, to remove the tumah from them, and not engage in something that would be pleasurable in nature. And that type of rechitza is mutar in on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. In general, we wouldn't allow that to happen, because we would say that we're afraid that the person is going to do it for pleasure, for hana'ah. So we prevent them from doing that. If there are mitigating factors, like here, where it's a tevilah shel mitzvah, there's a reason to go in the mikvah on Yom HaKippurim and Tisha B'Av, we'll say, okay, go ahead with those qualifications associated with them. But in general, we wouldn't tell someone who goes to the mikveh before davening or so on and so forth that they should go on the morning of Yom HaKippurim necessarily, because in those instances, we try to keep things objective and not subjective, and to allow those people the opportunity to make a decision, whether it's pleasurable or not pleasurable. We try to avoid those types of situations on Yom HaKippurim, on Tisha B'Av, in any type of halachic realm. And despite the fact that what we see from here is that Rava was matir tefillah on Yom HaKippurim, even though it's obvious if you're going to the mikveh on Yom Kippur, you're not going to wash yourself or bathe, you're going simply to be mitahir yourself. When it comes to Shabbat, we know that a person can go into the mikveh on Shabbat. Well, maybe there it's mitakin gavro. A person is becoming tor from the tumah that they had. How come it's permissible? We say, well, because on Shabbat it's permissible because if a person sees you going into the mikveh, you could be going to the mikveh to bathe, going into the mikveh to become tor. It's unclear why you're in the mikveh. And this is at a time when it was still mutar to go into the mikveh for those reasons necessarily, or when they didn't have a gzeira against it. But since it is mutar birichitza, therefore we say, okay, we don't know why the person's in the mikveh, so it's not obvious or mukhrach that he's doing it the tara. The problem is when you come to Yom HaKippurim, You can't say the same thing you say by Shabbat. By Yom Kippur, you can't say, oh, maybe he's in the mikveh because he wants to bathe. If he's in the mikveh because he wants to bathe, he's violating Yom HaKippurim. So the only reason somebody would be in mikveh on Yom HaKippurim is because they're becoming tohor. They're being taking themselves from tumah to tahara. If that's the case, then why are you allowed to go to the mikveh on Yom HaKippurim? It's obvious why you're in the mikveh. You're metakin gavra, you're becoming tohor. The answer is, because it's mutar on Shabbat, it's mutar on Yom HaKippurim. Just like by Shabbat we say tefillah is fine, so to by Yom HaKippurim we say tefillah is fine. The fact that we have such a braita that suggests such is indicative of the fact that that principle that Rava says is true. That going to anything that's mutar on Shabbat is mutar on Yom HaKippurim. So once we have support for Rava's position from a braita, from a Tanaic work on that side of his position, then we're going to say, hold that part of his position and eliminate the other side of his position, which is our Gemara here. And therefore, Rava would reverse his position with regards to being the swallowing of the vinegar. And he would have to hold like Abayu. He'd have to read our Mishnah like Abayu, that our Mishnah is talking about a case where he rinsed and then spit it out, rather than in a case where he rinsed and swallowed. So now the Gemara continues. So Choshesh b'matnav. Amar Rabbi Ava Bar Zavda Amarav. Halocha pi Rabbi Shimon. The halocha is like Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah. The Memra, to Rav ki Rabbi Shimon, severely. So from here it sounds like Rav subscribes to the position of Rabbi Shimon. Now it's interesting here, because the Mara is talking about the position of Rabbi Shimon with regards to Davar She'ino Mitkavein. By Davar She'ino Mitkavein, Rabbi Shimon says it's Mutar. What does that have to do with our Mishnah? Why would you say, just because our Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah says that, Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim hein, and therefore a person can anoint themselves with this rose oil because they're considered like princesses. So why should that be anything or have any correlation to Rabbi Shimon's opinion with Davar She'eino Mitkavein? So Rashi says over here, it's interesting, there are two different girsahot in Rashi. One guy, your girsah in Rashi is, Bekulei Shabbat, Svirlei ki Rabbi Shimon. You can spend kule with a kuf, and you can spell kule with a kuf. If you spell it with a kuf, it means throughout Shabbat, Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon. So, by the way, if you read it that way, then basically what the Gemara is suggesting here, according to Rashi, is that Rav, if he passes like Rabbi Shimon here, must pass like him throughout the Dine Shabbat. So that means there's no correlation between Rabbi Shimon and our Mishnah and Rabbi Shimon of Devarshein Mitkavein. Just happens to be that the Gemara felt that he had to be consistent in subscribing to Rabbi Shimon's position throughout Shabbat. The other Gersin Rashi, we have a kuf. Bekulei Rabbi Shimon means anytime Rabbi Shimon is mekil legabi Shabbat, Rav would paskin like him. So again, then there would be no direct correlation between the Mishnah here about B'nai Malachim and Davar She'enu Mitkavein. Just happens to be in both instances he's the kula. Since he's the kula in both instances, Rav would paskin like him. That's the Gemara's assumption. Tosafot does not like either of those explanations. And he says there must be some reason that this Mishnah has something to do with Davar She'eino Mitkavein. Therefore he says, Nir Rabbeinu Tam, the Mashimle, the Taima de Rishimon Matnitan, sounds like from this that the Gemara thinks that Rishimon's reason in our Mishnah is, Moshum did Shari Davar She'eino Mitkavein, because he thinks it's Davar She'eino Mitkavein. So over here, what is that? V'tanakama Asale Afilu L'tanug, Moshum did Zimni L'Refua Kavit. That the Tanakhama says you can't do it for pleasurable reasons because sometimes it's used for medicinal reasons. V'asar ba'alma davar she'eino mitkavein. So even though you don't necessarily intend for refuah, since it's used in instances of refuah, we're going to assume that that's what you did with it here. Rabbi Shimon demeikub alma koshari nami achi b'she'ein mitkavein refuah. Rabbi Shimon also is matur over here when you don't have intent for medicinal reasons. V'hashtat tishapir. And then it works well. So the Rabbeinu Tam, which is not necessarily the Pashtut HaMishnah, says that when it comes to this Shemen Vered, it's normally used by lay people for medicinal reasons. But there are some people, like princes, that use it for pleasurable reasons. Therefore, it came to Shabbat, then you want to use the oil. The Pashtut HaMishnah is that you can use this oil on Shabbat because it's not obvious or necessary that it's being used for refuah, even though you're intending it for refuah, because other people use it in other occasions. The way the Rabbeinu Tam is reading it, it's no, you're right. If you did it for medicinal reasons, you would not be able to use the Shemen Vered. The only question is, if you use it for, don't use it for medicinal reasons, use it for pleasurable reasons, then do we automatically assume that it's for medicinal reasons because that's what most people do with it? And even if it's Davar She'eino Mitkavein, you're not intending refuah, we're just going to assign you that, that mindset that it's for medicinal reasons, or is it Davar Sheino Mitkaven? He doesn't intend for refuah, so we're not going to worry about it, even though maybe curative, maybe it's helpful, because he's doing it for pleasure, therefore it's mutar, because it's Davar Sheino Mitkaven. So Rabbeinu Tam tries to qualify the case in the Mishnah to come up with a case of Davar Sheino Mitkaven to understand why the Gemara connects the two. Again, Rashi says that there's no direct connection between the cases, simply it's the same author of positions, either because he's Mekel in both cases, or because it's just Rabbi Shimon in both cases. Rabbeinu Tam tries to create a fundamental reason why the Gemara would believe that if you held like Rabbi Shimon this Mishnah, you'd hold like Rabbi Shimon other places in Shabbat, the Davar Sheino Mitkaven is mutar. Doesn't. That's the problem. That's what the Rishonim here are trying to do. They're trying to connect, figure out why the Gemara makes the leap.
Says the Gemara saying anything.
Oh, right here. All right, let's keep. The member of the Rav, because Rav Shimon's relay. Amar Rav Simi Barchia Mishmei the Rav. Hi, Misruch Raito Dinizaito. This plug, the plug of the barrel, that Asur La Duka B'Yom Tovo. You're not allowed to push it in tight. I'm Yom Tov. So what's the issue with that? That is, if you drill a hole in the side of the barrel, to put a tap in for the wine that comes out. So if you put in the tap doesn't always seal properly or cleanly into the hole. So what they used to do was they used to put cloth around it, and then they used to push the cork in, or they could put the tap in over there, and then the cloth around it would help stop up or fill in the gapping between the hole and the plug. So that cloth that sits there gets full of liquid. It absorbs wine. That's the part of the point of it there, is that it's going to get caught from the wine on the inside. It's going to absorb some of that wine. When you press the plug in, when you push in the tap into that area with the cloth around it, you are going to squeeze the cloth and have the wine come out of the cloth. So that would be a problem of schita. Tosafot over here discusses what exactly the problem is. If this is a problem of schita, or is it a problem of malabin? Because there are different schita, sometimes only applies to certain liquids, and malabin only applies to certain liquids or certain situations. So whether it's considered to be laundering because you're trying to squeeze the liquid out and that would clean the cloth, meaning remove the liquid from the cloth, or whether this is schita because you want the liquid out of the cloth, right? Tosafot spends a lot of time on discussing what exactly the issue is here. But it's clear that there's a violation of Shabbat, but an unintentional violation of Shabbat. So in this instance, when you have an unintentional violation of Shabbat, you would believe Davar Sheino Mitkaven is mutar, if you held like Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara is questioning, how could Rav have a position? Rav Simi Barchia Mishmei de Rav, that over here, this is Asur and Yom Tov. Why? Because even though it's unintentional, you're going to cause the squeezing of the wine out of this cloth. Gemara says, Bahai, I feel Rabbi Shimon mode. Over here, Rabbi Shimon agrees. The Rabbi Shimon agrees in a case of Pasuk Reishi. Over here, there's no way you can enter the plug, the cork, the tap, without squeezing the cloth out. It's impossible. It's a Davar Sheino Mitkaven, you're right. It's a Davar Sheino Mitkaven, but it's an inevitable outcome of using the cloth here and plugging the hole. And because of that, that's a problem. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees in cases of Pasuk Reishi. So because of that, we have a question. We had a question on Rav. We said Rav passes like Rabbi Shimon. But even after Rabbi Shimon, we find a case where he seems to pass it against Rabbi Shimon because it's Davar She'eno Mitkaven. And the answer in the end is, this is one of the exceptions for Rabbi Shimon, which is Pasuk Reishi. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees in cases of Pasuk Reishi that it is Asur. So that would not be a problem in terms of Rav or an inconsistency in the Psak of Rav. But then the Gemara continues, Rav Rav Chia Barashi Yom Rav Halocha Ke Rabbi Yehuda. Now we have an explicit statement from Rav that halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda by Davar She'eno Mitkaven. Rav Chanan Barmi Amar Shmuel halacha ge Rabbi Shimon. And Shmuel paskins halacha like Rabbi Shimon. Rav Chia Ba'avin Matni La Belo Gavre. Chia Ba'avin says it without anybody quoting Rav and Shmuel, but Rav and Shmuel making a statement directly. Rav Amar halacha ge Rabbi Yehuda. Shmuel Amar halacha ge Rabbi Shimon. So you see here the Gemara is clearly connecting between the two issues. Rav says halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that Davar She'eno Mitkaven is Asur. And Shmuel says that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, the Davar She'eno Mitkaven is mutar. So Gemara says, if that's the case, that Rav passes like Rabbi Yehuda throughout the rest of Shabbat with Davar She'eno Mitkaven, how do we reconcile that with his pasak like Rabbi Shimon here? According to Rashi, it's a question of whether it's Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yehuda, period. You have to be consistent. Or, because both, if you pass like Rabbi Shimon the Kula, you should be consistent to passing like him the Kula. According to Rabbeinu Tam, our case in our Mishnah is a case of Davar She'eno Mitkaven. And because of that, how could you have an inconsistent psak between these two cases? Salam Rava, ani vari shebechabura targimna. I and the lion in the learning group, we explain this. Umanu Reb Chiya Bar Avin. Who's this lion that he's talking about? It's Reb Chiya Bar Avin. Halacha Rabbi Shimon v'lav mitameh. When Rav paskin like Rabbi Shimon or Mishnah, he paskin like Rabbi Shimon in terms of the halachic outcome, but not for the same reason that Rabbi Shimon paskin the halacha this way. Rav has his own reason that is not necessarily why Rabbi Shimon did it. He says Rabbi Shimon's right, but not for his reason. So where it says my halacha Rabbi Shimon v'lav mitameh, what does that mean? That the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, not for his reason. Ilema halacha Rabbi Shimon d'shari. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar. V'lav mitameh, not because of his reason. Deal Rabbi Shimon savar masi. Because Rabbi Shimon believes that it's curative in nature. It's medicinal. Rav savar lo masi. And Rav says it's just not medicinal or curative in nature. V'malach loket is just about that mitziyut. They both agree that it's mutar. Rabbi Shimon agrees that it's mutar because, according to, let's go with the Rabbeinu Tam's explanation, that it's a davar she'enu mitkavein. It has curative properties. It has medicinal sides to it. But it's a davar she'enu mitkavein. On the other hand, Rav says, you're right, it's mutar, but not because it's davar she'enu mitkavein, but because it's just not medicinal. It's not medicinal, there should be no restriction on Shabbat with regards to it. So I agree, the halacha is it's mutar, but for a completely different reason. Where it says, v'savar Rav lo masi, did Rav really think that it's not medicinal or curative in nature? V'amikdani b'nei melachim sachin agabim otogayem shemen vered mechlad damasi. The Mishnah is explicit that the princes use it on their wounds. The princes are using it on their wounds, then it's clearly efficacious medicinally for wounds. And how could Rav suggest that this shemen vered is not curative in nature? Ella alocha ki Rabbi Shimon de Shari v'la mitameh. This is how to explain to it. Deilo Rabbi Shimon savar af agav de lo shchiach shari. That even though it's not common that people will put on shemen vered, nevertheless, it's mutar because there is these princes that use it. That's enough to give you the ability to utilize it on Shabbat. Rav Savar, Ishkiach in, Vilish lo Shkiach lo. Rav says it simply has to do with the nature of the oil. If the oil is utilized on a regular basis, then you can use it on Shabbat, because then it's not obvious that it's done for Rifuah. If it's not utilized, except for these exceptional cases when it's used for Rifuah, even though the princes use it, that would not be enough to be Matir. And in Rav's city, it was common to find this type of oil, this rose oil. And therefore, since it was common to find it, it wasn't just utilized by the B'nai Melachim, by the princes. It was used by the lay people as well. So what the halacha being like Rabbi Shimon is not because it's utilized by princes. I mean, it's not because the lay people barely use it and the princes do use it and that's enough. No, Rav says the reason that the halacha is Rabbi Shimon is because it's utilized by the lay people. It's a common use, an item that has common usage to it. If that's the case, then the heter is the same way that you use regular shemen. Shemen vered in Rav's city is no different than any other shemen that you would put on.
Let me really hard time with Tosfos, because Tosfos should apply to all the cases we've been doing for the past 3 days. If you, until now the Gemara's been saying that all these things, you can use it because it's not obvious you're using it for Rifuah.
Right.
But you're allowed to do it with the intention of doing it for Rifuah. So
correct.
According to Tosfos, it's saying that it's all totally on Dabar Shem Kavan, or whether you're intending to use it for Rifuah, and even if you weren't, as long as it has a medicinal purpose at the end of the day, that would make it
right, so I think I would differentiate between the cases. I think that's what Rabbeinu Tam would say here, that Shemen Vered is different than those other instances. Those other instances, the foods are utilized by lay people. They're utilized by everyday folk. So then you can say, even if you use it for medicinal reasons, there's just no reason because it's Ochel, because it's Shtia, then we don't worry about it. Shemen Vered is not used by people on a regular basis, like we were saying here. It's something that's unusual. So to pull that out of the closet and use it, if you're specifically using it for our refuah purposes, then we're going to say, that makes sense. That's what people do with it in these cases. So then say, oh, no, okay, well, the princes use it. That's the only reason it's mutar here, is because it's davar she'enu mitkavein. Because it's an unusual utilization of such oil, if he simply does it for our purposes, we say, go ahead. Even though 99% of people would use rose oil in this situation, would use it for medicinal reasons. No,
Mishnah doesn't
say.
He's interpreting it. Yeah. That it's talking about where you use it for non-refuah purposes.
Correct. Because the princes use it in certain situations, although it's a little difficult because it says the example they bring from the princes is a medicinal utilization. So that's why it's a little more difficult to say what the Rabbeinu Tam says. It's not so simple. But I would differentiate between the previous Mishnayot and this Mishnah with regards to Reino Tam is that previous Mishnayot are talking about cases of normal foods, people that, things that lay people interacted with all the time. Versus here, Shemen Verit is unusual that it's only used by princes. So here, over here, if you have intent for Refuah, then we're going to say you're right, and you can't use it. It's only when you Davar Sheino Mitkaven, we don't intend for Refuah, that's where the question arises. And I think that's why I would separate between what the Rabbeinu Tam says here and the other Mishnah. All right, so now we move on. We finished Shmona Shratzim, and now we move on to the Perek HaKosher, moving on to tying knots and untying knots on Shabbat. Right, I'm going to start here. I'm going to move for the first Mishnah, then to the second Mishnah. The one that's going to ask a question, then I'll come back and explain how the Rishonim view what's going on in these Mishnayot. It's a fundamental machloket HaRishonim here, which has broader implications of the halacha about how they read these Mishnayot, which is Elu Ksharim Shechayvin Olam. These are the Ksharim which are Asurim on Shabbat, and if you do them, you're in violation of the Melacha of Kosher. Kesher HaGimalim, the knots of the camels, V'Kesher HaSapanim, and the knots of the boats or the sailors. Shem shu chayav al kishuran, kachu chayav al heteran. It's a two-way street. Just like you're chayav for tying knots on Shabbat, if you untie such a knot on Shabbat, you will also be chayav. Right? This brings up a broader question. I'm not going to address it today. Maybe we'll try to speak about it tomorrow. Which is, when you have melachot, which are, quote-unquote, destructive in nature, do they have to be done specifically for a melacha like we have in the Mishnah, which is you have Koreya al-Manat Litfor, Hasoter al-Manat Livnot. In all those cases, the destructive melacha is done with the intent to create, move towards the constructive melacha. In other cases in the Mishnah where it does not say that specifically, for instance, a kosher and a matir. When you're tying a knot and matir, you're undoing a knot. Do we still have to apply the same principle that matir, untying the knot, is only chayav if you untie the knot in order to tie a knot? Is that the case? Or do we say that as long as you're untying the knot, that is the malacha, and if it's done for constructive purpose or for utility of some sort that you're untying it, that'd be enough. That'd be sufficient to be chayav. So you have to ask, that's a fundamental question that you have to ask when it comes to these malachot like matir, where the Mishnah doesn't specifically specify what's happening. Is an important beralach on this, and maybe I'll try to speak about that tomorrow with regards to this. Today we'll try to deal with the broader picture of kosher, about the malach of kosher itself. Okay, so now Gemara says, Rabbi Meir Omer, kol kesher shu yachol ha-hatiro b'chat miyadav, any knot that you can undo with one hand, ain't chayavin alav. That's not considered to be a real knot. If it was a real knot, you wouldn't be able to undo it with one hand. It would require two hands to undo the knot. The fact that you can undo it with one hand is indicative of the fact that it's not a real knot. So, my kesher ha-gimalim, v'kesher ha-sapanim. What is this knot that goes on the gamal, the knot that goes on the boat? Ilema kitra dekatre bizamama, v'kitra dekatre beistrida, hai kesher sheno shel kayamo. That's not a permanent knot. The description that the Gemara is assuming here is the zamam. The zamam is the nose ring of the female camel. So you have the nose ring that's placed into the female camel, and then from that nose ring you tie a rope from the ring to wherever you want to tie the animal down. If you want to stop the animal, you tie one end of the rope to the nose ring and one end of the rope to a rail, to something to keep them in place. The sapanim have the same thing. The boat, at the top of the boat, the edge of the boat, they have a ring. Those rings, you tie the ring to the shoreline, and you throw a rope from that, tied onto that ring, and then you tie a knot on the shoreline to hold the boat in place. The Gemara now says that rope that runs between the ring on the boat and between the ring of the nose ring of the camel, is that what you're speaking about? Is that the kesher that you're speaking about? That's not a kesher shel kayama. It's not a kesher shel kayama because it's undone sometimes. You don't always leave it there. It's not permanent in nature there because it will be undone. What is the permanent kesher? The Gemara says, Ela kitra dezama magufe distrida gufa. That rings themselves, those are permanent. So don't think of the rings or the nose ring of the camel being a metallic ring, rather a rope. They put a rope through the nose of the camel and then they knotted it. That they will never take out. When you unleash the camel, when you take off the rope from the camel, you don't undo the nose ring. The nose ring stays in. And you undo the rope that holds the nose ring to whatever object that you tied it to. So because of that, the nose ring, when you put that in, if you made it out of rope and knotted it, that's a keshul shokayama. You'll never take that out. Same with the boat. The ring at the edge of the boat, don't think of a metallic ring, but a rope ring. A ring there, where you put it around with rope, that ring will never be removed. That's a keshul shokayama. That's the keshul that we're speaking about in our Mishnah. So that's what the Gemara determines. That's a keshul, that's an example of a keshul shokayama. And that's what the Mishnah is speaking about. Rabbi Meir Amar Kol Kesher. By Rechud Vai. Achui Dimar. Either the brother Dimar Acha, or we have other Gersa is Dimin Acha, that is from Acha. Aniva the Rabbi Meir Mahu. A bow, according to Rabbi Meir, what's the din? Tami the Rabbi Meir Mishum Diacholati Robachat Miadav. The reason behind Rabbi Meir's position is because you can undo it with one hand. And this too you can undo with one hand. It's because it's not tight. If you can undo it with one hand, it's indicative or shows us that the knot is not tied tight. That may not be true. You may be able to tie a bow very tight. The reason you can undo it is because of the nature of the knot. It's a slip knot. That's the nature of a bow. It's a slip knot. So the reason you can pull it out with one hand is because of the way the knot was designed, not because of the lack of strength in the hold of the knot. And then, maybe he would say there, it's tight, and it would be asur, teku. The Gemara does not know, in the position of Rabbi Meir, whether the focus is on the ability to undo it, and that's the qualification. The qualification is ease of undoing it, that tells you whether it's a knot or not, or it has to do with the tightness of the knot. Is the undoing it with one hand just a siman, that it's just not tied tight? But if we know it's tied tight, then you'll be chayavim if you can undo it with one hand, like the bow. Or is it the sibah? It's the reason. Right? There's a difference between it being indicative or the reason that it, or is it really the reason? The reason is if you pull one hand, it's not a knot. And that would be true by a bow as well. The Gemara leaves that as unresolved. Okay, next Mishnah. Yesh l'cha ksharim, she'ein chayvilim, kekesher hagimalim, ukeesher ha'tzapanim. There's certain ksharim that you're not chayav midoraita on them. Like the ksharim that we saw in the previous Mishnah. And then the Mishnah moves on. It says, kosher isha, miftach chaluka. A woman can tie on the opening of her beged, of her clothing. Vechutei svacha, and the strings of her hair covering. Veshel piskia, and the ones around the belt. Viritzot man'al v'sandal, and your shoelaces, and those laces on the sandal. V'nodaut yayin v'shemen, as well as the closures of flasks of wine and oil. Ukdera shel basar, and the covers that go on the pots on the fire. V'azbi Yaakov omer, koshrin lifnei ha-beima b'shvil shelo teitze. You can put up a rope to, like a gate, to stop the animal from exiting. Now, the Gemara is going to ask right away that there's an inconsistency here in the Mishnah. Agufa kasha. Have the same problem. Amart ish ksharim she'en chayvin aleim kekesher agamalim ukekesher ha-tzapanim. There are certain ksharim that are not like the ksharim, the knots that we talked about in the first Mishnah, which are chayav midoraita. Chiyuvo deleka ha isurei ika. The implications of that statement in the Mishnah are that these are not chayav midoraita, but they're still asur mi derabanan. V'hadatani, and then the remainder of the Mishnah gives you examples of kosher dishta miftach chaluka afilu echatchila. That sounds like you do that no problem. Mutar the gamrei. So why, if the Mishnah start out discussing things that seem to be patur of alasur, then it jumps and gives you examples of things that are mutar. So Gemara says, Hochikamar, this is what is meant by the Mishnah, that yesh ksharim she'en chayvilim kekesher agamalim kekesher asapanim. There's certain knots that you're not chayav on, like the ones mentioned in the first Mishnah. Umayniyu! What is an example of that? Kitra de katre bizamama, v'kitra de katre biistrida. It was the havamina in the Gemara before. The havamina of the knot. Not the nose ring, but the knot to the nose ring that you use for the leash. Not the knot of the ring on the boat, but the rope that goes from that ring to the shoreline. So that's the one that is a surmi derabanan. That's patur. It's not a kesher shel kayama, that like the knot for the nose ring itself or for the boat ring itself. So, but it's a kesher that is asur mi derabanan. That's what the first line in the Mishnah means. Then there are those are chiyuvahu deleka isureika v'yesh shemutarim lechatchila, and there's certain knots that are mutar legamrei ma'iniu. And what are those? Kosher miftechei chaluka. That's the remainder of the Mishnah that's listed here. What the Gemara basically lays out over here is that there are three categories of knots. There are knots that are asur min ha-Torah. Knots that are considered to be kesher shel kayama, asur min ha-Torah, you can't do them, you do them on Shabbat, you're chayav, a chatat, chayav skila, that is a violation of Shabbat. There's certain knots that are only asur midrabanan, they're potur midoraita, they don't qualify to be a knot midoraita, but nevertheless, the chachamim goes there on those knots that you shouldn't do them, so they are asur midrabanan. There are other knots that are made on Shabbat, which are mutar the gamri, completely mutar. That means mutar, both midoraita and midrabanan. There's no problem with making such knots. And we have examples of them in these two mishnayot. Mishnayot give them. The question is, what's the qualification for each one of them? What makes something a kesher midoraita versus a kesher midrabanan versus mutar? So Rashi has a simple explanation. He says on the Mishnah, the first Mishnah, he says, she'eno matiro leolam. A kesher kayama is something that you never undo. It's a knot that is permanent. That's what it means. Kesher shel kayama simply means permanent knot. The next grouping of the ones that are taken out sometimes, but are asur midrabanan, Rashi says over there that some of those times are taken out every once in a while. They're not taken out. They are there for long durations. They're not permanent, but they're there for long durations. In general, when you have the leash on the nose ring of the gamal, you will untie it from the side that is tied to the fence. You will untie it from that side. You won't untie it from the side that's tied to the ring. But there are times where you would take it off. So that is what we consider to be, midoraita is not chayav, because it's not permanent. It's not there all the time. But midorabana is asur, because it stays there for very long durations. So because it stays there for long durations, that's enough to be asur midorabanan. What's mutar lechatchila? That is something that you do, as Rashi says, the chol yom sharile. You open and close it every day. Now, Rashi gives that as the example of something that's mutar lechila is every day. There is a machloket in the achronim as to how long. Rashi says one day. There are others that say if you open it up every 3 days, that's enough. And there are some says it has to be weekly. There's three opinions about how often does it have to be opened to be considered mutar lechila. Rashi says it's a 24-hour stance. You have to open up within 24 hours. Otherwise, that's not considered to be mutar lechila. It's something that's open and closed on a regular basis. Others say that the window is 3 days. Others say that the window is 7 days. That is Rashi's opinion. There are others who say that it has not to do with how. Rashi just says it's a practical issue. Do you leave it there permanently or don't leave it there permanently? There are others, the Mordechai brings from, I think, B'Shem, the Re'im, that it has to do with your intent. If you intend to leave it there permanently, that is a kesher shel kayama. If you intend to remove it after a long duration, that's also midrabanan. You intend to remove it right away, that is mutar lechatchila. It's very similar to Rashi. It's just that it has to do with your intent rather than what practically happened. But that's the sheet of those Rishonim. Those that argue on them, the Rif and the Rambam. The Rif and the Rambam say that what Rashi says is incorrect, but rather there are two qualifications to know whether or not it is both Kesher Shel Kayama or Mutar Lechatchila. And that is, it has to be both. Kesher Shel Kayama has to be something that's permanent, and it has to be done by a professional. It has to be a professional knot that is left permanently. That's what makes it a Kesher Shel Kayama. And the opposite will be true to be mutar lechatchila. In order for it to be mutar lechatchila, it has to be a knot that's not permanent and not done by a professional. It has to be done by a lay person, not be permanent. And now what's going to be also the Rabbanan? Is you have one or the other. You have a professional knot that's not permanent, or you have a permanent knot that's done by a lay person. Those will be asur midrabanan. And that's the shita of the Rif and the Rambam. So of course, the Shulchan Aruch is going to paskin like the Rif and the Rambam, because you already have two of his three determinants usually for what the halacha is. So the Shulchan Aruch brings down the halacha like the Rif and the Rambam. The Rama over there comments that according to Rashi, that it would be mutar lechatchila if you simply just open it up every day, whether it was a professional or not, professional or not. The Rashi ignores this issue of professionalism. So even though we could be makil like Rashi, nevertheless we are choshesh v'shita the Rif and the Rambam, unless there's some necessity where we have to be somech and Rashi. Ramal also brings down the possibility of what it means to be opened on a regular basis. Does it being opened on a regular basis mean every day like Rashi? Or does it mean those other periods of time of 3 or 7? So in general, we're choshesh both for all the shitot. We try to be choshesh for the shitot, which means that we only put on knots that are opened on a regular basis, like when you tie your shoe, something that you open and close within a 24-hour period on a regular basis, and something that's not a professional knot. So those are the things that we are matir to use on Shabbat. Again, but makom adchak, where you need to be someich and Rashi, then if it's not a, if it's simply a knot that's open and closed, even though it might be a professional knot, there is room to be makil, at least according to the Ashkenazim, because of the, what the Ramah mentions. Okay, we'll stop over here.